From Northern Stage, this is Within the Wall. I'm James Whitman. I first met Olya at Northern Stage's Cultural Encounters group. I'd come along to introduce myself and to pitch this podcast to the members of that group, but before I'd even begun, Olya had done my pitch for me. She was passionate and articulate about the importance of sharing people's stories, which was exactly what I wanted to do with this podcast. Olya grew up in Biker before the Biker Wall was built. She suggested I should meet her cousin Anne, who had worked in the local washhouse.
I only started at the washhouse because the hours were great, because my mum could look after, could babysit for me, you know. Because I think my mum must have been a bit of a snob. She didn't send me to commercial school, to private school and everything, to work in the washhouse.
Right.
That's the way.
You
that's
were
lowering
yourself, yeah.
Oh, yes, that's there's a lot of people in Biker who are very fussy about the washing. And they used to go with the old chassis off.
The prams.
The prams and that. And they'd be piled up with washing like that, you know.
Right.
And they used to like to do it by hand, you know. So we had these, like, alleys of big, deep...
Or like a post tub, would you say? So some of the women would be washing by hand, and they use a washboard too to rub up and down.
That's
and,
right.
And the wooden post sticks to pound the washing. And then afterwards, you would hang it in these racks that would pull out, almost like clothes racks, and push them back in. And then this huge boiler system blew out this hot air. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many racks were there? 50 maybe?
Oh, quite a few.
Quite a few. Mm-hmm. All filled with clothes with hot air blown through them. So when you went there, I mean, it was an all-day enterprise when you went to the washhouse.
Yeah.
And what I liked as a teenager going there was I was all ears, because the women were talking about sex.
Oh,
they were talking about men.
Everyone gossiped.
The gossip was great for when you were a young lass. Yeah, you felt like you were learning a lot, yeah.
And used to be a saying of, she's the talk of the washhouse. You know, that means all the people used to gossip. And everybody knew everybody else, you know. They knew what you were having for your tea, what you had last night for your tea, you know what I mean? It was...
Yeah, you didn't need Facebook, that's for sure.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No.
But you'd also know who was in trouble with their man and stuff like that, wouldn't you?
Oh, it was plain away. It was a great place. What's tales?
Yeah, it was a real community place, really. And it's funny now, you know, like when you think about it, people have their own washing machine. We've become so self-contained. You miss out on that whole community feel of doing things together.
It was a community. Yeah. The washhouse was a community, you know.
Besides washing clothes and gossip, the washhouses had another important function.
They didn't have any bathrooms, so we'd come in and pay money over for a towel.
This is at the washhouse, because people would go there for a bath.
And some of them, unless you paid and got a gas heater in yourself, didn't have hot water either. So they used to come into the office part of the washhouse and hire a towel and soap and go and have a hot bath.
The other thing about the bath that I think is interesting is that you'd get a nice, deep, hot bath. And I seem to remember we'd get a bath like every 6 months, whether we needed it or not. And you'd
we
go...
We got baths before.
I say it's every 6 months. She contends it had it more often than that. But
I used to go every Saturday.
Oh, well, you were lucky.
Luxury.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway... They would fill a nice hot bath for you, but there weren't any taps. They just used a wrench.
Right.
So when the water cooled down, you couldn't top it up with any hot water. So that was a way of making sure you got out where you couldn't put any more hot water in. I remember that.
I never thought of that, Dan. I thought it used to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I asked Dan and Olya if there were any particular smells they associated with that time in Biker. Anne remembered the local factories, but Olya remembered something a little closer to home.
My mum and I lived above a butcher shop.
Maxwell's.
Yeah. My bedroom was above the walk-in fridge underneath, so my whole bedroom would vibrate. I had a vibrating bedroom. And then the
that's
smells.
That's what's wrong with you.
Oh, that's what's wrong. But the smells.
Oh, it's horrible.
Horrible. I mean, around, especially on a Monday, they had a cauldron in the backyard, and I could look.
You used to run there down the meat.
Yeah, I could look out of my bedroom, look down, and they would be boiling the sheep's heads, and there were all these heads bobbing around, you know, in the water, and the smell. And none of my friends ever wanted to come and visit me because it smelled so bad where
I
we lived.
I wonder why.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. It was horrible. I remember something funny from that time, too, because I woke up in the middle of the night and the place was full of smoke. So I woke my mum up. I mean, saved our lives, really, by waking up to the smoke. Smoke that kills, right? We couldn't find any fire anywhere. And so we went down outside, you know, it's the middle of the night, and looked in the butcher shop, couldn't see any sign of fire there. But anyway, she sent me to the phone box to phone the fire brigade. And I went running in my flannel net nightie and slippers up to the first phone box.
That's on Gravy Street.
Yeah, and had been vandalised. So I went on to another phone box, also vandalised. And I actually end up going all the way up to the top, to the fire station.
All right.
And knocking on the door, knocking on the door to tell them that there was a fire. And but the firemen wouldn't give me a lift. They jumped in, you know, headed down, and I had to get back. And what they discovered was that there was cracks under the fireplace and all these, I guess, hot coals had got in between the floorboards, so the whole floor was just smouldering, and that's what they just hacked everything up then. But yeah, but I remember that. Those good old days, the vandalised the phone booths.
Happily, smoke and the stink of rendering meat weren't the only smells Anne and Olya remembered.
Because I remember my Nana used to, they would have, one day was your baking day, and you'd bake this bread and cakes and all that, and then you'd share it with your neighbours, and then the next day one of them would be their baking day, so they would be baking for everybody. So you'd have your day that was yours.
Well, like flat cake, what?
Stotty cake.
Stotty cakes.
Yeah.
Take that Auntie Minnie, take that so-and-so, and the soup on the New Year. My Nana had a copper boiler in the corner that used to wash clothes in.
Yeah.
But New Year's Day made soup
in it. I didn't know that.
Everybody got soup.
Everybody got soup.
Many of the people I've spoken to have talked about Shields Road and how much it's changed over the years. I've been told that what was once a busy street with all the shops you might need now has more charity shops and takeaways than anything else. But Anne remembers fondly Biker's first takeaway.
It was the first takeaway in Biker.
Oh, the Albion Pie Shop. The sisters all made these pies together, these meat pies. It was fantastic to go in there.
There used to be the domestic factory just down the bottom of Albion Road, where they made the domestics.
We used to go. All the factory workers would come. Right.
Put a note through the door with a, an order on.
Yeah.
And then there would, some of them would leave a plate or a bowl or whatever, and they'd come and pick them up. You got your pie and your peas and your mashed potato and free gravy, you know. Free gravy. And
bring your own plate.
Bring your own dish, you know. But our Pat said that
Yeah.
This is another cousin that lives in Sedgefield. Her mum, they called her Auntie Mary. And she's very, very fussy housewife, shall we say. And she used to bring like a pie dish on. She used to go, look at that. Look at that. Not half washed.
Oh, you mean that what people were bringing their plate, she wouldn't put the food on because it was still mucky, the plate.
Sweet, yeah. The two sisters used to go, shh, be picking,
yeah.
Be quiet. But I mean, it takes nothing to scrub that, you know. Look at it.
But one time it was vandalised. Sacks of flour.
Kids had turned everything upside down.
Right, yeah. Did they pick themselves up after that, or did they close it down then? Can't remember.
They must have, but I think. I mean, it was great because it had two empty rooms, you know, at the back. It could have had seats in there.
All right.
But it became too expensive for health and safety.
Oh, the rules.
The rules for to have toilets and whatever. I mean, we only had an outside toilet in the backyard anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can't really change that,
you know.
Moving on from food, I asked Anne and Olya how they spent their time growing up in Bigger.
Oh, we'd go in the back lanes and make up your own games.
My mum used to talk about they would use a hoop.
Yes.
A hoop. Metal hoop, run down the street and you got the hoop going. And marbles, of course.
And what's it called?
Spin and top.
Yes.
You whip
and
to keep it going.
Different colours on it now.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could do that for ages.
And jacks, where you'd throw the ball up and then grab the stones. Skippy rope.
Played skippy ropes all day. And that was very popular because Grandad was the stevedore on the quayside. And he used to bring me these big, thick skipping ropes. We used to have two sets. French skipping.
Yeah, when you got two sets going at once. And all the songs that went with them.
Oh, yes. All the rhymes.
The big ship sails through the alley, alley, oh. All that childhood culture. Nobody taught you it. It was taught by kids. It was like passed on to another generation of little kids, wouldn't it be?
Used to play, we had two balls.
Oh, yeah, two balls against the wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, I mean, my mum used to say, yeah, you, because she was one of 11. You know, our mothers were sisters. You just got chucked out because the house was so small and you just had free reign of the streets, you know, yeah. And they'd go up to the skip. The tip. And they would dig around in the tip. That's where it's now called the stadium opposite the Star and Shadow Cinema. It's a running track, but underneath it was a tip.
Right.
So kids would go up there, dig around, and get little bits of crockery. And if you could get a bit that had gold on it, that was like a florin. Mm-hmm. So that was really... And they would trade their little bits of crockery that they found on the tip.
That's before my time, I want it.
I don't know, before your time, that's true. And then, I'm just telling my mum's story now. Mm-hmm. They'd be sent out to Throckley. It was a big event. Kids would get on the tram. And they'd be sent off with a jar of water and a slice of jam and bread and be gone for the day. They'd all head off to Throckley, which was wild nature back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, that was built on by the time we came along. But I think, yeah, my mum used to feel sorry for kids these days. They don't have free rein in the streets. But then there was no traffic.
They don't use their imagination, do they?
Yeah.
Well, that's all we had was imagination.
Yeah, they made their own fun, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And even like going on trips. The same people who hung out together would go on trips together from the pub and...
From the butcher's homes.
And you know, everyone's on the coach and they're all singing. Now it seems weird sometimes if you go on a coach trip, nobody's saying anything. Oh, yeah, they should all be singing and whistling. I miss people whistling.
When I was young, I was told not to whistle because our Lord hung his head in shame.
What?
For a girl whistling.
Oh, I never knew that, really.
True. Nana Thompson used to say that.
Well, I went to grammar school and I was the only outed Catholic. Well, there was two lads. Ah, did you know this? For the 11 plus exam, it only came out about 10 years ago when certain papers were declassified, that in order to pass the exam, girls had to score 10% higher. Otherwise, they would have had gender imbalance in the grammar schools.
Really?
Yeah. And I used to wonder because I wasn't... There was only three people in my class, and I think there was about 45 kids in the classroom who passed. And I knew I wasn't the cleverest. I was just lucky that day, I think. But it was the girls who were always at the top of the class. But there were two lads who used to be much further down. They were there. I never understood why until those papers were declassified. Huh. And they kept quiet about being Catholic. But I wouldn't go into the school assembly. I wouldn't sing those Protestant hymns. It was really stupid because school assemblies were fun. But I was such a passionate Catholic that I used to stand on the table in the school library and talk about transubstantiation as opposed to consubstantiation.
I have a girlfriend. She got the hat one of that shield down the St. Augustine's thing for the highest marks and for what do they call it?
Oh, religious studies or something. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she was like that.
Yeah.
My mum used to have a saying a praise portion in church in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, I love Jesus. It really, he was a pop star to me, I think. And then when I went to Ghana and I saw Bruce, this American lad, and there was an American girl next to me and she knew him. And I was just looking at him and I thought, oh, he looks just like Jesus. And she saw me looking at him and she says, don't you think he looks like Jesus? And I dropped religion like that. I just made Bruce my God, poor guy. No wonder it didn't work out. You should never make a man into your God. Bad idea.
Eventually, Olya would bring Bruce home to Biker, where they were married. Her family were keen to impress Bruce, an American who looked like Jesus, and they knew exactly what to do.
We used newspaper, you know, for toilet paper. But then when I was marrying this American that I'd met in Ghana and various guests were coming, that was the first time we ever got toilet paper to impress the Americans.
My granddad used to sit forever in the toilet, cutting squares, putting a hole through for the string.
A string, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And, like, people recently, during, like, lockdown, getting in such a panic about not having access to toilet paper.
Oh, not toilet paper. Yeah. Well, you know, in lots of parts of the world, they don't have toilet paper. They use water and wash their bums.
Yeah.
Wait.
In African countries, you know, whatever. And
you're supposed to have to.
This is a bit of an aside, but I've got a friend who used to live in Indonesia. He's a Dutch friend. And in some of these countries, they can't believe these Westerners. And he told me about this, I think she was Indonesian or Malaysian, something like that, opera singer who came to Amsterdam. And there was about 1,000 people in the audience. And when she got up on the stage, she was looking out. And all she could think of is these people sitting with poo on their bums. And she couldn't sing. She had to leave the stage. She couldn't sing them. Honestly, when Bart, I never had thought of it that way when he told me. Yeah, but no, we managed to get by with the newspaper. And then they came in with that horrible wax paper, that sisal, was it called? Because you used to have it in the pub, right?
No, well, I had to get that because everybody kept pinching the toilet rolls.
People kept in the pubs, they would pinch the toilet rolls. So they
had a pub. I said to the guy, he said, are you having trouble with the toilet rolls? And I said, yes, they're disappearing. So the next time I went down, I said, I forget his name now, so and so, are you still having trouble with your toilet rolls? Oh, no, not the toilet rolls. He says they've screwed me bloody new toilet seat off.
They took the toilet seat off, okay.
I says that Jimmy the cold emergency. He says they've put a new toilet seat on and he says they've screwed it off.
In 1966, Newcastle City Council began demolition of Biker's old Victorian terraces to make way for the Biker Wall. Lead architect Ralph Erskine told the council that his main concern was for those already resident in Biker and the need to rehouse them without breaking family ties. Despite this, by 1976, fewer than 20% of the area's original residents had been rehoused in the Biker Wall. Olya remembers it as a challenging time.
I remember my mum was one of the last people left in the old Biker. You know, it was horrendous for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years or something, just really horrendous. But they were told, if you haven't got a place by this date, you'll get £2,000. We could buy a house with £2,000 back then. And that was going to be on the Monday. Anyway, they moved around the Saturday before the Monday, yeah. But like we've said, they were all heartbroken, though. I mean, they were moved to Walker or, you know, my mum was in the tower block just off Hughes Road. But they were where they were once, right next door to each other, in and out of each other's houses and stuff. Now you'd have to get a bus. And they all said they'd rather go back to the old Biker. They didn't care that they had indoor toilets and hot water and stuff. Yeah, didn't matter.
It was a Morgus community.
The whole time I was chatting with Anne and Olya, I was struck by how fondly they remembered Biker as it was, despite the standard of living that's hard to imagine today. Anne lives in Gateshead now, and she misses Biker's neighbourly spirit, while Olya does what she can to keep that spirit alive.
A little say to me, maybe, how's so-and-so doing, you know, and say, oh, I don't know. I don't like to ask. Why do I not like to ask? Years ago, you would ask and knock on the door and see it out so and so. But now you're considered to be nosy.
When I'm yeah, biking. I think I'm considered to be very nosy.
Yeah, oh yeah, you probably are.
But I'm just curious about people. I'm going to keep that up and that Geordie tradition if you just can talk to anybody. Like when I lived in Manchester, I had a boyfriend then. He used to be embarrassed sometimes because the way I would just talk to anybody. And then he came up to Newcastle and he said, oh, they're all like you. You know what I mean? You could be at a bus stop. I love it. And when I go on the bus, I sit in the old folks section. Well, I qualify now, but anyway. But I always chat like, oh, where are you headed? Whoever's there. Because an older person might not have talked to anybody all week.
Sometimes you can sit all day and don't talk to anybody.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to talk to people and you get some little gems of stories and things. And I mean, I've gotten some great little poems from just things that people say around me on the bus. Yeah. You can just mine. What's these cryptocurrencies mining? Well, I guess I'm just mining people for stories. I'm greedy. I hope I never run out of my curiosity. Feels like a blessing.
But you keep forgetting.
I keep forgetting. Well, that's why then I'm never going to be bored because I'll hear it again. I know she'll say, but I've told you that already. Let's go on. Tell us again. Because even when you're telling another a story, every time I hear a nuance, I hear something new. Every time I see you, I hear something new.
Thanks to Anne and Olya for sharing their experiences. If you're as greedy for stories as Olya is, I hope you'll join us next time, Within the Wall. Within the Wall was produced by James Whitman as part of a Reinvent residency with Northern Stage. In this episode, you heard the voices of
Olya Bowers
and
Anne Gallagher
and some lo-fi beats by Coma Studio.